First of all, thank you, Tim, and thank you, Judith, and welcome everyone. And we're working with my book called Ready, How to Know When to Go and When to Stay. It was published 2 days ago. But some of you have some early versions of it. And we were reading chapters 1 through 3. So for next time, if you could read chapters 4 and 5 and the epilogue, because we'll be winding up next week. So I'd like to begin with a screen share. We begin with a meditative comment from the book. And now I'm on page 120. Okay. Gail, would you read this for us? If you want to unmute, and also if you could read slowly.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I accept the fact of what is happening. I do all I can to deal with this present predicament. When the next thing happens, I will do all I can to deal with it too. I will continue in this style, affirming or aspiring to the courage to change what I can change. When all avenues of creating change have closed, I will say yes to what is. I open to the grace to be able to do this. Now I have the serenity to accept what I cannot change. A new door, unnoticed before, will open. It will be the gift of mindful wisdom, my true spiritual goal after all.
Thank you, Gail.
You're welcome.
And you can see that this is based on the famous prayer that's used in the 12-step programs, that I ask for the serenity to accept what I can't change. I ask for the courage to do whatever I can do to make changes. And I ask for the wisdom to know the difference. And what I'm proposing is that when we have the serenity to accept what we can't change and muster our courage to change what we can change, we don't have to ask for the wisdom to know the difference. It just comes through automatically. The wisdom that was already in us is automatically activated by the two commitments. And these commitments are totally based in reality. So if what I see is that I can't change something, then I say yes unconditionally to it, and I let it be. So if I, for instance, see that my adult child is now using drugs, and I've done all I can to support him or her in recovering, but no matter what I have done, it hasn't changed the situation. When I finally sit serenely, although it'll be difficult to find serenity, but when I finally say, well, I did what I could do, and what's left for me is to become the prayerful witness. So I'm still contributing to the recovery, but I'm doing it as a prayerful witness, not as somebody directly involved in the project of recovery. I've done that part. I I had the courage to change what I thought I could change. And now that I see that it didn't work, I'm going with the serenity to accept what I can change, while at the same time remaining totally connected. But now my connection is through witnessing and praying. And when I do that, the gift of mindful wisdom opens up. It was always in me, while at the same time it was a goal. A spiritual goal will always be something already in me. It's not like a psychological goal. I have the goal to become a dentist, so I'm going to go to dental school. That's a goal for making a plan for how you're going to have a career. But the goals we're talking about here, the goal of mindful wisdom, a spiritual goal, is already inside of us. Unlike going to a school to engage in a career. So I accept the fact of whatever is happening in my life right now, and I'm doing all I can to deal with this present predicament. And then when something else happens that's disturbing in any way or challenging, I'll do all I can to deal with that. And I'm going to continue with this. As things happen, I'm going to do all I can to deal with them. That's the equivalent of the courage to change what I can change. Now, when I notice, as an example of the adult child who's a drug addict, when I notice that, okay, I've tried every avenue to create change, and they're all closed at this point, then what's left to me is only yes to what is. And it's a grace to be able to say that. I open to the grace to be able to do this. And this gives me the serenity to accept what I cannot change. And when I do that, a new door opens. What is this new door? It's the door into my inner wisdom, which was the goal from the beginning. It was the goal that applied right up here. My goal is to accept the fact of what is happening and do all I can to deal with this present predicament. So it becomes a perfect circle. Are there a couple of reflections about this? Is there, or do you have any questions about any of this? It's a way of building trust in yourself. How do I trust myself? I trust that when there's something I can do, I will do it. When there's nothing I can do, I will be the prayerful witness. And when I do both of those, wisdom opens up in me. Somebody had a comment? Catherine or Michael?
Peggy.
Hi, is Catherine here with us? Oh, yeah.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Hi.
But it's Michael. Good morning, Dave.
Michael.
You know, and I relate considerably to the example you're giving. And I guess I'd say it's in terms of my experience, it's one thing to come to acceptance that you cannot change the situation, but it's quite another to achieve serenity about it.
Well, the serenity is not something that we try to achieve. It's promised to us as the result of deep acceptance. When you go to the deep acceptance, I really, really accept this, even though I hate it. I just let myself allow it. And because my fidelity to what's real has become more important than whether I can change something. When you come in with that kind of an attitude, it opens up it opens the serenity, just as it opens the mindful wisdom. See, in the prayer, it sounds like I will have the serenity to change what I can't change. But I'm reversing it in this. I'm saying, when you accept what you can't change, you will receive the gift of serenity. When you do what you can to change what you can change, you will have the gift of courage. And when the two come together, you'll have the gift of wisdom. So it's opening to that grace. Does that make sense to you, Michael? Tell me, because I want to really stay with
it. On a theoretical level, Dave, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I'm awaiting the gift of serenity. I think I have really worked through accepting that I cannot change things.
Okay.
But I don't feel what I would describe as serene about it.
Well, maybe that'll just happen.
You're Irish.
And Catholic.
Yeah. I have another quote here from the book. So I'm going to just put it in because I want to see if this helps. There's a famous Quaker book called A Guide to Inner Peace. So here's the quote. Barbara Valentine, would you read this quote?
Sure. Just as it's on the page on screen, correct?
Yeah.
Tempests never reach into that serenest heaven within where pure and perfect love resides.
So when the love includes deep acceptance of the choice that someone has made, however unacceptable it is at the common sense level, that is the equivalent of my love has become perfect. And that brings us into the serenest heaven within. The serenest heaven within. So anxiety can't disturb the serenity that comes with the pure and perfect love that is a combination of acceptance and courage.
Dave, is that quote in the book?
Yeah.
What page, please?
Well, first of all, Michael, are you seeing a little more from this? It's on 126.
Thank you.
May I say something, Dave?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a little step in there that we have to deal with that
okay.
You're sliding over. Once we reach the acceptance, we still have the grief to deal with. And that is the step before serenity. I think we have to put that in there and allow ourselves to grieve.
I'm glad you brought that in. How's this? Jackie, you want to read that sentence?
I am now the mournful witness who prays for the best to happen.
That's what you came to with the addicted loved one.
But you still hurt, you still ache, you still have to go through the period of grief before you get to the serenity. Even grief has a sense of serenity that accompanies it if you are able to walk through it.
So the healthy grief.
Instead of pushing it away and saying, well, that's the way it is, that phrase, it is what it is. You have to grieve sometimes because it'll stay there until you finish it. It's a process. And it will come back from time to time, but you have to accept it and understand how to live with it, how to welcome it in. And that's when the serenity comes, when you understand that you're not going crazy, that your life isn't ruined, and that you are going to grieve and you are going to suffer, nevertheless.
Okay, I really like what you're saying. I'm glad you brought that element in. I am now the mournful witness who prays for the best to happen, and my grief is truly healthy when I am fully accepting the reality of what I don't like. Okay, other comments about this? I'm glad we're kind of expanding it.
Yeah, Dave, I've got a question.
Okay, go ahead.
So my curiosity around kind of having the wisdom to know what you can and can't change, I wonder if you've created anything, because I haven't read the book yet, if you've created a rubric or anything like that that has some indicators to help us know when we've sort of hit the limit of what we can actually change. My sense from what you've already presented is that it's almost more intuitive than there is any sort of data or rubric where we could measure whether an event in our lives is something we can still change or not. I hope that makes sense. But so is it more than just intuitive? Are there actual elements that we should explore when we're in a situation where we really want to change something? To know whether or not we've hit our limits of whether that situation can be changed or not.
It's that what I'm doing no longer has any impact. It's falling on deaf ears. Nothing works now. When that occurs, you know that you've come to the end of whatever you can do, and now you're moving into a new realm, which is I'm the mournful witness.
Yeah. What about in situations where the issues we might be facing are systemic in nature, and there's no real way to tell if we're actually moving the dial or not? I mean, I always come back to injustices that might be legislated or you know what I'm saying? Like how are we to know in some of those instances whether or not we've really hit the limit of what we can change when there's no real metric that's easily, you know, manageable.
When you notice that the possibility of further change no longer exists. For instance, the Senate is debating with the new. With the nominee for the Supreme Court. And so who has beliefs that are certainly contrary to yours, like very conservative, for instance. And so you're going to go to the Supreme Court with your placards and you're going to be protesting outside. But once they take the vote so that he or she is now on the court, that's the end of possibility of change. Now you switch to how do I elect the kind of senators who would vote in ways that I think are more ethical. Mm. So you're doing what you can do until you see that what you're doing has no further effect. And a major issue with someone who can't leave what isn't working is not getting that, not really seeing that, believing rather in your wishful thinking that, oh, I can still make a difference.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any last comment? Catherine, did you have a question? Any other final comment? I know it sounds kind of complex, but I think with the discussion we've been having, it becomes clearer. And this whole topic is essential to our overall topic, which is, how do I know when it's time to go and when it's time to stay? And today we're going to be on the topic of how do you stay in something that could get better? So on the one hand, we could stay too long in what can't work, but now we're going to go to, how do I stay long enough in something that can work? And this, all we just talked about, is a pathway into that. Okay, so I'm going to end the screen sharing and go on to our overall topic. And this applies not only to relationships, but to jobs, to affiliations, like with a religion or with a political party. Also would apply to any situation in which you are noticing that this could work. What can I do so that it possibly can work? So I use a very simple model, which is in your book. It's called admitting, or should we say addressing, processing, and resolving. So we're having a conflict in a relationship, and we're not talking about it openly. So the first part of our practice is, I will now speak up and say what's bothering me. I'm unhappy here. I feel criticized a lot, and it just seems like I'm not being heard. When you openly say that, that's called acknowledging the pain that you're feeling. And notice I said it as, I statements. If you come across with blame, you're avoiding the actual work that it takes to make a change. As soon as you start blaming, or as soon as your mind is full of judgments against the other person, you know that you're avoiding addressing the issue and sharing your feelings. So the addressing is the saying straight out, the emperor has no clothes. And then the processing refers to sharing and showing the feelings that go with your expression about what's bothering you. And then you work together. Third part you have to do with the other person. First two parts you do on your own. Third part you have to have the other person join you. And now you're working together on how can we make a change in the way we relate to each other so that things work out better for both of us. So let's start with the first one. And this is the one that probably for many people would be such a big challenge, because you're not used to being assertive, or you're afraid that if you do speak up, if you do share what's going on with you, you will be put down for it, you will be judged for it. So instead, you're going to be willing to say straight out what's happening inside you. I feel uneasy here, I feel uncomfortable here, and here's why. And I'm not blaming, I'm just reporting the impact, what it feels like when we're together. So we're on the topic of how do we stay with something that could work? And this is our first step. If we go through all three of these steps and it doesn't work, then we would go through them again in therapy with a third trained person who would help us go through them, because these are also the three steps in therapy: address the issue, process it, and resolve it. And if that doesn't work, then we've moved into the other realm of realizing that this is not something that can work. This is something that does not work. So now my question is, do I stay in what doesn't work? It takes us back to the first part of our topic, which is to stay put when it isn't working. But anyway, I begin with addressing, that is saying, even saying something like, you know, I've just been unhappy in this relationship and I really want to talk about it. If the other person says, okay, let's talk about it, now you're in the realm of possibly something can change here. If what you get in return is, what are you talking about? Is this, where did this come from? If you get some type of defensiveness, or if that ego arises and, you know, says, how dare you bring up something like this? If you're going to be blamed for bringing something up, you can't go any further. You'll have to say, oh, would you be open to talking about it in therapy? You have to have a responsive voice on the other side to do this kind of work. The second part is talking about your feelings. If that also threatens the other person, oh, I see that when I bring up my feelings, such as my sadness about how unhappy I feel in this relationship, I see that it kind of upsets you, and I don't want to do that, but I do want to have a chance to express my feelings. If even that doesn't work, once again, you let it go, and you're going to have to move into the therapy part of it. And then the third part is, how do we work on things so that something changes? The ultimate goal of all of this. So we'll take the courage to believe and trust that here's something I can change. And it's going to take my speaking up, my processing, showing my feelings, all without blaming, and then working toward a resolution. But if the people at the other end, be it a relationship or a job or whatever it is, won't go there, you're only going to create more stress in yourself if you keep pushing it. So you'd have to let it go. Questions about this or ideas? You get the overall concept?
Just as a reminder, we're on page 106.
Okay. Anybody want to share something about your own attempt to do this at some point and what happened when you did? Okay, Catherine, hi.
I've been working and mourning a loss of a friendship, and old friendship, and pretty close in the past. And things happened that just realized that anyway, I wasn't able to be fully who I am around this person, and being closer was never happening. So for a long time, I just put it on hold. But then I wasn't comfortable with that either. And so I think I found a middle road now. I think I've let go of needing to have a closer relationship and let go of what was, not that close really, but anyway, let go of what was and have just a shallow relationship now. And that's better. That feels better than having nothing.
So you were able to go from what you had hoped it would be like, mm-hmm. namely a deeper bond, mm-hmm. to more of a movie friendship or a walk on the beach friendship.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
was the desire that it be deeper based on on evidence from her or him that it really was possible to go deeper, or was it just your own wish?
My own wish.
Okay, so you found out.
I don't think that person is capable or willing. I know that they're not willing to go there, so yeah.
Okay. All right, that would be a very good example of an intelligent way to handle it. And by the way, I think you're the kind of friend that one would like to have a deep relationship with.
Thank you. I think so too. I've learned to believe that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Sue?
Yes. This is appropriate for me today because I've just been feeling some of the exact feelings that you're talking about with a good friend of mine. And I'm just, I have been contemplating how to approach it. So how to approach us. But it's exactly what you had said. I'm uneasy, I'm uncomfortable. And I just need to let her know that.
How would you let her know? Like what's just one sentence that you would use to open up the discussion?
I've been uncomfortable with us lately.
Okay.
And
don't take this as threatening.
Okay.
And
don't take this as threatening. I've been uncomfortable, and I'd like to let you know how or why.
Yeah. And the reason this is important to me is because our friendship matters. Mm. So I want to get everything out on the table. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play close to the vest. I want to show my hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-hmm.
When you talk that way, the other person might be more likely to hear it.
Oh, thank you.
Because the minute you started talking, the other person's going to feel threatened. Guaranteed.
Okay.
Because we're not used to having somebody come to us and say, hey, I want to talk to you. Takes us back to school days. David, stay after class. I have something to tell you. Uh-oh. We don't like that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so all of this is about making changes that involve other people and our expectations. Other examples or ideas or questions? And I think it is easier to talk about it in the realm of friendship. Barbara?
Yeah, I was just looking at the on page 107, and I get stuck on the resolving part because I've had a couple of
things. Okay, hold on one sec. Let me go there with you. You're on 107?
It's the three parts, addressing, processing, and resolving.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to read us that paragraph?
Okay, resolving. To resolve an issue takes letting go of any ego charge around it. We are not trying to get back at anyone. We're not holding a grudge or smoldering resentment. We make a commitment to some kind of change and make an agreement for improving the situation. So I've had a couple of experiences lately where I have felt hurt and excluded and stuff like that. And so that led to me feeling not only hurt, but resentment. And I find that a hard thing to kind of let go because it is judgy. It's like, you're the one that pissed me off by hurting my feelings. and excluding me. And so I find it hard to resolve.
We can't go. No, no. Wait a minute. We can't go with you're the one.
That I know.
Yeah.
I know.
All right.
But so that, how are you I don't say that, but that's just my feeling. It led to some resentment inside of me. And so then I get stuck in that because I'm feeling that pain and resentment. It's hard to kind of let that go.
Okay. I'm glad you brought this up because you're going to help us see something very important. When you begin with judgment in your mind, like you're the one, it's never going to work.
Yeah.
To try to do this process. You have to switch and go to, I'm sad that it's not happening the way I would like it to happen. If you notice that you're beginning with judgment, you can't speak up. It's going to come out no matter what. You can't hide it.
And that's exactly what I did say. I said, I'm really sad that this is happening. And the response was, well, I'm sorry you're sad. And then kind of walked away without changing anything. And
Okay. So it didn't even work at that level.
No.
Okay. So what did you find out?
I found out that it's toxic to hold on to that, and it's more freeing for my own psyche to accept that that's out of my control right now because I have shared my heart authentically. And if someone is unable or unwilling to meet me halfway and make a change, it's kind of, you know, you lose control over part of it and have to just accept it.
Okay. Well, thank you for telling us about that.
Thank you.
And you're helping us see another angle of it. And let's make a distinction between judge and assess. To assess is to evaluate a situation and see what it's about and how it can change. That's assess. Judge is to censure the other, to make the other person wrong or bad, and to shame the other. So it's always okay to assess. Oh, I feel uneasy in the relationship. That's an assessment. It's her fault. That's a judgment. See the difference? And so the first part of the work is to clear away in mindfulness the judgments and the wishful thinking and the expectations and just go with something's not working and I'm sad about it or angry or whatever your feeling will be or scared. And I want to share that. So the feeling part, that's the second part, the processing. Okay, any final other comment about this? I'm glad we're having this kind of a discussion. And by the way, I want to make something clear, which is that the four talks that we're having would never give us enough time to summarize the book. So we're not doing that. We're taking specific points in the book each time and trying to go deeply into them. And reading the book is the way to find out about the whole topic. Okay, Jody, you want to make your statement and then we'll...
Hi, David.
Where are you, Jody? I don't see you here. Oh, there you are. Hi.
Yeah, I am. Hi, David. Good to see you.
Is Jennifer with you?
No, she's in San Luis.
Oh, okay.
Yes, with my.
Oh, well, I wish she had joined us. Tell her I said hello.
Oh, I will.
Jody and Jennifer are twins, and they often come to our class together.
Oh yes,
I'm here.
Oh, hi, Jenny.
Oh, you're here.
Oh, she's in San Luis.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
I thought you were here.
I'm here.
All right, go ahead, Jody.
So my question is, okay, so let's say, you know, there's an issue, you know, there's a problem, but like, for instance, like if it's a family member, like your mom or your dad, and you try to say something, this makes me feel uncomfortable, or I'm, you know, uneasy with whatever's going on, but then you're just met with just total dismissal of anything you're saying and getting mad. And I don't know what to do. I just get frustrated and sad, and then I just have to let it go. But it's a family member in a way that I, you know, you can't just leave them forever. I mean, I we've had this talk, but so I'm just kind of curious how you deal with when you're just dismissed or met with anger, and no therapy is going to happen, let me tell you. And I'm trying to come from this place that you're talking about. So I just kind of feel stuck.
That would be, you know, mom, when you answer like that, it makes it hard to trust that I can bring up my deep feelings with you. And that really makes me sad. If you go to the grief, you're going to the most legitimate part of what you're experiencing. Mother will not let this in. Mother will not hear this. And I'm sad about that. And you're not blaming her. You're just getting it that I can't go into what's happening within me here. I'll either be blamed for it,
mm-hmm.
or someone will become defensive.
Yes.
Okay. And so you want to go straight to the grief part. And I know that's, you know, when you come in with, I want to fix this, it messes up the true feelings, that the processing part of this. So you made your statement, that's part one, addressing the issue. Then you wanted to go deeper and you got a rebuff. So you pulled back and you don't switch to blame, you just acknowledge the sadness of the miscommunication. And if this keeps happening, you have to change the nature of the communication so that you keep everything at a superficial level.
Yeah.
Combine that with fewer visits, shorter duration.
And what was the thing that you said earlier, just because it was important? You said something like, this matters to me because I care about our relationship. Is that what you said? Something like that?
I care about our relationship. I really want it to deepen. I really want it to work. And, you know, that's why I want to clear this up.
Okay.
And, you know, are you open to hearing about it? You have to ask the permission of the other person, even at the beginning. I forgot to mention that. Is it okay to bring up something that's bothering me?
Mm.
You get no, then you have to respect that and pull back.
Okay. Because family member, you just maybe have less visits, but if it's a friend or a partner, then that's when you decide the next steps about staying or going. Yeah. Okay.
You see, we're continually adjusting the way we relate and the expectations we have from others on the basis of what they show us they're willing to do or not do.
Mm.
And we're not blaming them. We're just saying, oh, you can't go that deeply here. It's not going to work. And by the way, if all this is connected with trauma from early life, as in,
yeah,
example you're giving, Jody. Mm-hmm. It really changes the ease with which you can do this, because then it becomes even scary to bring something up.
Yes.
I have a funny story in my childhood. One of my uncles, Uncle Sal, I didn't like sports. I liked poetry. And he would call me a sissy. And of course, I was like in my late 30s. And I said to myself, I resent Uncle Sal for having shamed me like that. And I really should speak up and say, what I feel. In other words, I want to use this method I'm talking about right now. And boy, it was going to be hard to do, because, you know, he's the patriarch of the family. And, you know, this hefty Italian guy, and I'm the little 90-pound weakling. Plus, he's my uncle, so I have to be very respectful. Anyway, we were at his house for dinner, the whole family, and our Italian way of doing things, we speak up even when the whole family's there. So I very gingerly said to him during the dessert, Uncle Sal, it really bothered me that when I was growing up, since I didn't really like sports, you know, you called me a sissy. He said, you were. When I heard that, I thought, oh, well, that's as far as you're going to go, Dave. So I just laughed and let it go. And my resentment completely disappeared. I wasn't coming from judgment. I was coming from true concern or sadness. And something about him saying, you were, like, you know, how do you answer that? just made me laugh. And the other people laughed at the table. And, you know, it just broke the tension. And it was clear that, you know, he's never going to apologize. But, you know, that's just who he is, and let it be okay. And, you know, I love him to pieces. But it is what it is. All right, so we're going to break up into the breakout rooms. Thank you, Jody. And of course, our topic is this topic. What gets in the way of you speaking up to others about what's bothering you? Or are you getting better and better at it? Anything you want to share along those lines? And I guess Tim is putting it into the chat. So we'll see you back here in about 15 minutes or so.
Yep. All right, friends.
Do you want to just put three in a group, Tim, rather than four, since we only have 15 minutes?
Sure. Let me just recreate the rooms real quick. Okay. So you'll have at least three, maybe four, depending on how the numbers actually work out. And if you find yourself in a room where there's only one or two of you who have accepted the invitation, I'll move you pretty quickly to another room so that you have a better chance at having three. All right. I'm going to open all rooms. You can just accept the invite. We'll see you back at 11:15.